Welcome, welcome, welcome to Nodes in the Net, a weekly tangential irreverent conversation that caters to the interests of liminal trickster mystics like you. And like Kristen, who is today's guest on the podcast. Kristen is known by many of you as Goddess Moon on the Creek Masons Discord, and we had a wonderful conversation about astrothermaturgy. I think I'm saying that wrong. The sort of like control of the energies of the solar system and stars into your body in order to produce what Damien Eccles calls solar consciousness. So, we talk about like the higher self and alignment with your true will. We talk a lot about childbirth and community organizing and things like that. I think it was a really fun, high-spirited, energetic, and engaging conversation that like really got me high afterwards. I can tell that there is a lot of prana or chi or whatever you want to call it. I'm not sure what it's called in sort of the Golden Dawn tradition, but that subtle energy that is just pumping out of Goddess Moon, out of Kristen, because I was infected by it, and I had a wonderful rest of my week as a result, and I think you will too after you listen to this episode, so I can't wait to hear what you think. Why don't you head to creekmasons.substack.com and let me know. You can find ways to contact me at creekmasons.com. Or you can find ways to read my essays and sign up for the mailing list and join us on the Creek Masons Discord, where, of course, Kristen hangs out very frequently. One of our beloved and appreciated and honored regulars. And won't you join us on there? We'd love to have you. We're going to launch into this episode with Kristen, but before we do, I'd like to read a little bit of my most recent essay on the Creek Masons Substack. It's called Woo Zooming, and it's the second part to the two-parter that I've written about sort of zooming through, like in and out of organizational levels of the self. So the last time that I posted an episode of Nodes in the Net, I read the essay about sort of the more materialistic and embodied and perhaps like internal family system-esque aspects of the self that govern our day-to-day reactions to stimuli and things like that. And this time I wrote about the higher self and the soul field and things like that, that I think are also partially responsible, at least, for the sorts of decisions that we make during an incarnation. So I will read you a little bit of this essay. You can find the full thing on creekmasons.substack.com, and I'd very much appreciate it if you subscribed and got notifications for new Nodes in the Net episodes and new essays and things like that. That would be lovely. And then we'll get right into this episode. Cool. Woo Zooming. The soul field, or the Brahman to the higher self Atman, or God the Father to the higher self Son, or the All in the language of the Kabbalion, or Source, the Divine, or the ontological primitive of the universe, as you prefer. All consciousness is an expression of this soul field. The higher self is a bit like a finger of the soul field, that it dips into three-dimensional reality in order to have experiences that are only available to consciousness that has taken a human incarnation. I like to think of it as an energetic field that permeates all material reality, one that projects matter by condensing itself to a slower, more dense vibration, and that expresses through complex biological systems. Through the maturation of its infinite higher self aspects, the soul field seems to be drawn toward a telos of achieving maximum local complexity. We have incarnate experiences that inspire a longing for reunification with Source and alleviation of suffering. These draw us toward practicing reverence, patience, stillness, and radical acceptance, and thereby deepen our union with the All. The soul field seems drawn toward a totalizing awakened awareness, ubiquitous enlightenment, Gnostic experiential comprehension of the universe as alive, as source, and as soul. So we are all this field. Again, like a finger of it has been dipped into a human incarnation. The finger is still part of the body, but while it's dipped into the puddle, it forgets it's attached to the other fingers it sees wiggling around in there. The meditation athletes who plumb the depths of conscious experience, however, report that there is another layer once the boundless consciousness and unconditional love of the soul field is examined with concentrated vipassana or insight meditation. These Buddhist adepts take the woo-zooming even further and arrive at a Gnostic experiential understanding that all this is fundamentally illusory and that the deepest truth to the self is anatta, that it doesn't exist. All right, please do read the rest of that essay. I really enjoyed it, and I think you will too. I enjoyed writing it. I think you'll enjoy reading it. All right, let's jump into this episode, and I will catch you next week. And we're back. So okay. we just drew the Five of Swords and then immediately the call dropped, which I think is absolutely hilarious.
Yeah. Yeah. And it for me, when I think about the Five of Swords, it has to do with me persisting with things that are uncomfortable to come to resolutions. And that's yeah. what I've just been telling you, is that I had the feeling this was going to kick me in the teeth and tell me to deal with the stuff that yeah. I'm dealing with right now, right? So that is, yep. I thought it was maybe going to draw the hermit because of the content of what I've been dealing with. But no, it was just like, no, stop despairing. And because I have this cycle with the despair and just being like, oh, it's just all too much, because I like to take yeah. all the fun night. You know, I'm trying yeah. so hard, and
I know. Well, before we get too deep into it, yeah. do you want to? What deck are you using? Do you want to describe the card okay. you drew?
Yeah, this is the Hanson Roberts deck, and so it does have similar imagery to like the Rider-Waite deck.
Okay.
But it has a different artist. But I'd say it's very Rider-Waite when you are
okay.
making symbology on it, which I enjoy. So I picked this up when I was 12. I went on a field trip with a school and I had like $20 and
fun.
For $12 as well. I bought this in a mall in St. Louis, Illinois, Missouri, St. Louis, Missouri, the Union Station Mall. And just was like, it came with a book, the Tarot Unveiled, the Methods to Its Magic. And I just like, jumped in because I've always been an artist and kind of the intuitive things. And, I only nowadays have words more to describe what like I went through as a kid and how I relate to the world. But this was just right up my alley as far as being able to give my like talk to my subconscious in a more concrete way
using yeah.
symbols.
So are we using like your first ever tarot deck right now?
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, that's so fun.
And it's an odd deck because it has one extra card. Which is it's I've always had a hard time. I'm like, I'm supposedly it's to all believers, but it looks like go all believers either way. And it's kind of like like an empty card. It's one of those
things weird.
Like maybe best not to like try to look for outside, or even though it's inside inspiration, but like look for anything else, but just to look within, like sit in yeah. the silence and look within. Like,
right.
Are you asking me this? And oftentimes I get it if I've just like keep asking the same sorts of things.
Yes. I get the same thing.
For that. It's like, it's the rolling of the eyes card. No.
Yeah. I get the same thing like on Poimandris, the like Creek Mason Discord bot. If I ask it the same question too many times, it'll like throw up Wheel of Fortune and be like, hey man, when it comes down to it, I'm just a random number generator. Like you gotta look into your own.
I love how much comedy there is in seemingly magical things. Like,
yeah,
sit around and joke with the universe. It's the freaking best.
Yeah. Especially, you know, so you've noticed this. The tarot has like kind of a wry sense of humor.
Yeah.
Like
I dig it. It's, I don't know if it's just a reflection of me. It's whatever. Again, I can't, I don't know the answers. I'll give this disclaimer, which I always do when people start to listen to anything I'm saying, like I know something. Like I'm just some person and I just say it like I see it. And I'm like, what do I really know in the scheme of things? But these are my impressions or how it seems to me. And I'm going to talk about it because it feels really hard to not be able to. And this is one of the things I like about the Creek Masons is I feel like I could talk about some of the things that world people just like, just shame me. I can't, just can't.
Yeah, I know. You know, that's why
I don't know if I want to say you can't talk about it that way. That's the hard time I have with that.
Right. I don't know if I want to say like necessarily that's why I started the community, but it quickly became like its sole function for me or its primary function. Like that feeling of like being with the other kind of liminal trickster mystic types.
The sense of humor, I really enjoy that.
Oh, yeah.
That's referring to like me talking about my trials right now. It's that despair, just that basic despair of like not feeling those things. And it's always things. That's when the things start to appear. Like the universe has, since I've started having this issue, been like, okay, fine, I'll throw you a couple bones. Because I just wasn't feeling the connection and feeling creative and having so much of the synchronicities or noticing them. And I just start to despair when that kind of stuff starts happening.
Yeah. So the Five of Swords in your deck, is it like it's the guy like standing in the foreground with a sword and there's someone in the background crying? Like,
He's got one sword facing down and the two swords facing up and the two on the ground facing different directions. And they have to do with different symbolism.
Okay.
And there's the people weeping in the background.
Yes, yes.
And so I think this says a lot about just my despair when it comes to my drive and just lifing in general. Like I'll just it's a very much overall thing.
Yeah. It's hard out here.
A lot of it has to do with that being taken seriously too. And that's part of it is like feeling like I have these visions of what I want to do and I am working towards them and have been for, like, I've always been the kind of person to be like re-looking at really what I want to do and readjusting my path all the time to do those things and try to not go to sleep and forget what I'm wanting to do.
Yeah.
Make it overt, schedule, you know, down to the little things. And
yeah.
But it's been harder since I've gotten COVID a couple of years ago to feel like, so this is the truly authentic shit I want to do. This is harder. I'm scared about not being taken seriously and being shamed.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
So, and it sounds weird because, I'm wanting to do what I'm doing is I'm studying for my birth art certifications.
Okay.
Because I've always been like a crunchy mom and home birth. And I gave birth to my kids in my bathtub at home. One of them. By myself in the room by myself. So like, I want to be able to provide the opportunity near the two pillars of life and death. So birth and death doula for people to be able to navigate those things. And because birth is such an empowering thing, such a spiritual thing, so primal, and I want to be able to give women what I had to like fight to get.
Yeah.
To be able to just do it in my own self, like in my own head, in my spiritual space, like my body and the universe and everything felt like wanted me to do it. And I felt it was the most, one of the, it was the two birds I have in myself are the two most empowering things in my whole life.
Wow.
Actually, that was when I despair that it helps. Just
yeah, it's interesting. You know, the last like four guests, apropos of apparently nothing, have like brought up this this idea of like parenting and childbirth and stuff like that. And of course, today we just entered the third trimester of my wife's pregnancy. So it's like
I saw the room. Yes, I saw the.
It's
room.
Very near and dear to me. There you go. So it is. It's not a full synchronicity. You do know that we're expecting.
I didn't really know it all before then. That just kind of popped up, and I was like, "Oh, that's so cool!" Like because that's like so much of that is on my mind because I've had five children. My oldest is 24. So, you know, I nursed like for 13 years. I carried them around on my backs. I slept with them. I homeschooled, radical homeschooling and home birth. So like I've been, it's the real world as far as I'm concerned. Like in touch with source. It's more, that's all I can say for me. This is how, naturally living a life full of art and traveling and love and just all of it. I just like to grow things, people and ideas. And
I love that. Yeah.
The garden, you know, we were just really in touch with all that, living in a completely separate, almost completely separate world. Not so much that like we were cut off. I mean, that I made sure that we all had access to a lot of different points of view and the world to see what was going on outside. And we traveled quite a bit, but still living like tribally.
That's so cool.
Humans more just is the way what we are evolved to do.
What inspired that? Were you raised that way or?
No. Although my parents were very good at making sure I had access to the world a lot, as far as we did some traveling, but more like I was able to explore a lot of different things and see what worked for me. You know, they allowed me to have land in the backyard to just go grow stuff. They allowed me to be messy about that, to explore different activities and try them out and fail. We had a little more money, middle class, part of the vanishing middle class, you know, and I had access to music. I was able to travel to Europe for a month during like my sophomore year in high school. I went to the Columbia Arts College during my junior year in high school to be able to like see a big like and live kind of by myself, almost like at my grandmother's house. But she was super old. Like I was, you know, taking the train down there and doing that thing. Like I got to adult and there was a lot that was really great about that, but when it came to actually, the other stuff came about when I got pregnant, and then I had my first baby, and it was like, I got to put them in a crib, and I'm like, I tried that for 2 weeks, that shit was, no, and, you know, and the breastfeeding, and I thought everyone breastfed, I thought most people who didn't breastfeed was because there was something wrong. Or the mom had died or, you know, I didn't know it was just something that had been really pushed. And most people did at that time to model. I didn't know that. Things like that. And it was weird. I just went with like my gut. I don't know.
Interesting.
I've always kind of been a barefoot hippie. Like as a kid, the reason I called myself Moon is because even as a small child, I would like go outside in the middle of the night and just sit under the moon or sleep in the moon from the window and just try to be outside and touching the earth all the time. And I was one of the outside. And also, I was a latchkey kid, so I had lots of time to just run around outside.
Yeah. My sister calls herself a latchkey kid. Yeah. Are you Gen X?
School, went home, had a key. You know that.
Yeah.
Those are the times in the Chicago suburbs. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it was.
Yeah, but everything.
We had a burnt down building down the street, but it ended up being like just concrete, and then all the weird items that it was like a watch factory, so all these weird metal items like springs and shit all over. But then next to it, there was all these trees growing. We made a clubhouse and people would drop stuff there, like a whole truck, and we'd play in it. was the shit. If you've ever heard of those playgrounds, those natural playgrounds where they just throw a bunch of stuff out there and let the kids play and build their own stuff.
Yeah.
It was like that. You know, I learned to be really like, just be able to use what was around me and be creative about it. And that's how I live my life. I'm like, I'm a furniture here that I like pulled stuff out of the trash and made things with, you know?
Yeah.
I'm like a dragon's lair here. It's awesome. Trust me.
Yeah. All your treasures.
Well, I mean like the furniture and the way I built it so that it's functional for me. I'm vision impaired. So it's a place for everything and everything in its place. And things are hung in certain ways. And everything, so it's like, it's so easy to function right here. Everything's right in its spot.
So. Yeah. Yeah.
Made from trash.
Nice. So you were saying your sort of shift into this like crunchy granola, you know, natural mom thing just kind of like snapped into place as a result of your first pregnancy, I think.
It really did. Plus I was already, like I said, I was a Girl Scout. I loved to be outside. I was encouraged to be outside. And my mom always just said, oh, you just dance to the beat of your own drummer. And they let me just kind of be me. So,
yeah. And you were buying tarot decks
in any way, you know?
Mm.
That sounds terrible. That's not what, you know, I didn't have anything that changed that. I think most children are like that to begin with, scientists and
yeah,
great at functioning and creative and so many things that the trauma takes out of them at times, you know?
Yes. Yeah. I guess that's something Ram Dass says, right? The process of being brought up to exist in a civilization that's sort of like against the nature of human beings.
Right.
Like that process, very few people become like well-heeled adults without having some kind of like trauma, you know. He says no one gets out of it unscathed. And so
my traumas are more like things where those, that kind of stuff came in handy. I was always one who, you know, resisted it, so I have like the anger issues and stuff to deal with. But as far as doing that, I was able to do it, and slowly it, like, getting to the point where we were living in our kind of own little society, the homeschool community, it like took,
were there others,
it just happened
you?
Little by little, you know?
Yeah.
I changed towns and the homeschool group had disbanded because they were different sorts of Christian and they were fighting among each other about their mission statement.
Oh no.
Like, oh, let's form a secular co-op on Facebook. It's still there. And I'm like, oh, let's do play dates and let's do Friday field trip series. And I set those up, and let's do STEM learning through the things at the school. Let's go on field trip. You know, we did so many, I set up so many different things, but I set it up co-op so other people could do that too. And now in town, there's like a lot of the places in town that do activities for kids offer homeschool classes during the day, like the YMCA and the gymnastics place and some of the martial arts places and some of the art. I also fought the school district because they were denying homeschoolers to be able to use their services part-time, even though the state law said that they were supposed to, and even provided a way for them to get paid for it. And now they not only just like don't give people a guff about it, but they have a whole system for intake and to find and to integrate those kids as much as they want, you know, want to be. Because I tried to put one of my children in part time to use like the science lab and to get violin lessons and to be in theater arts and do the art studio. And they said no. And I'm like, hey, what? that feels good to have done that. But homeschooling is a big thing for me. And
so wait,
nothing that created a community, and then
it was
easy to like go farther and farther into the lifestyle that worked for us because we had like a support group now too.
Yeah. Well, that's what I was going to ask about. The process of forming like a community of homeschoolers, like a tribe you've called it, or a co-op you've called it. I would love to learn more about, like, community building is something I'm really interested in. So, like, what was the process like in finding other people who are aligned with your point of view?
Okay, so how it happened. I moved from Illinois, South Dakota, came to North Dakota. Okay, so I was on a website called Mothering, which is kind of a crunchy mom's website with a bullet, what are those called? Message boards. And okay. On the message board, lived here in this part of town. We had similar values about certain things. We started talking about that movie, The Business of Being Born, which is Ricky Lake, a documentary by Ricky Lake, where she talks about the money behind it and how we ended up with the birthing, the systems that we have currently, and things about home birth. She has home birth in it. So it was something kind of close to our hearts, and we wanted to do something about it. So I paid the money to get the screening copy, and we did a thing at a church where we screened the movie for people, and then I found people to do a panel for question and answer that were involved in the birth industry. So there was like a doula, midwife, a hypnobirth lady, psychologist, that kind of stuff, nurses.
That's so cool.
Yeah. And then it was just free will donation. So that's how we met. And that's when I found out they were homeschoolers here. And I had just started homeschooling the year before I moved here. This was in 2006. Gosh, the time has flown. That's almost 20 years. Oh my gosh. Okay. Anyway. Wow.
Oh no.
Wow, I've come so far. That just flown for a second. Okay.
Oh yeah.
The thing lately too is being like, how I've noticed repeatedly how it seems like the pandemic just kind of zooped like 3 or 4 years out. And anyway.
Time dilation.
in my internal timing. But anyway, so that's how I got into the knowing about that there was a homeschooling community here. And I was like, that's cool. And I'm like, is there a group in town? And after research, found out what had happened to the old one. And that's when I just started to start the co-op. I just literally started on Facebook and I invited her, the person I had met doing the screener
panel.
Movie.
Yeah.
And the Q&A thing. And and some of her contacts on Facebook, and that's how it started. And then with their family, we started doing Tuesday night play dates at some of the local places with those Burger King with the playground and McDonald's, they used to have them at the mall. So we'd have to buy food or outside if it was nice, you know, but it's Grand Forks. So when I say that, we have a lot of winter, there's a lot of indoors. So, and then, it just went from there. People on Facebook started to join and friends of friends. And before I knew it, we had quite a large, there's thousands of families in there. That's when I started to make the connections with, as far as local connections, I just started calling around.
Did you say thousands?
I started calling the local places. I was like, call the police station. Hey, can we do field trips? You know, and the fire department and the city hall. And we even went to the dump. That was actually awesome. The dump and recycling center. And then outdoor things like state parks and wildlife sanctuary, and went to some vets. And and then we started calling the schools. And as far as we have universities here, we have University of North Dakota. So they have a lot going on in their different departments. So we started calling them and seeing what kind of classes they get into.
Yeah.
We went.
Did you say thousands of.
Huh?
I'm sorry, did you say, I keep interrupting, but did you say thousands of families?
Now we do, yeah. We have a few thousand families in there now. I assume
that's
some of those
really
people
influential.
Who added it on Facebook a while back and may not be as active, but there's still quite an active community on there. And I do remember one year, it was probably one of the years shortly before I handed over the reins for the group to somebody else because of my divorce. It's a whole thing. But we, at the last minute, were on July 4th, we're going to rent a pavilion and throw a 4th of July party for the people who have nothing to do, right? Or want to get together. And we ended up with over 200 people there. And we advertised it at noon. And by 6 p.m., we had like about 100 people there, probably.
And yeah.
They changed over through the night from then. I'd say about 200 came all together. So
wow.
Then again, like one of the families like has 15 kids.
So is this like are these people? I mean, you've said already that some of the, you know, more woo, I think, beliefs, some of the more esoteric stuff that we get into on the Creek Masons Discord.
Yeah.
Maybe it's hard to find people in your physical space who won't shame you for those kinds of beliefs.
Yeah, and I've lost contact with a lot of people from the homeschool group, and I'm not putting anyone down. I'm totally tolerant of how they want to feel about things and me. That's their lives, and I wouldn't want to at all put them down for that. So when I got divorced, unfortunately, being a single female, a number of people no longer wanted to talk to me. But some people had already, I was just too much for them anyway, just really loud and just really boisterous. I'd been banned from the homeschool prom because I had my shoulders uncovered at one of them. Someone had the invite, but not the dress code. And I didn't know. And no one told me. They could have just told me to wear a sweater. I would have put it on. I didn't know. But apparently, like, that made a lot of people mad. It's whatever. It's fine. Like, I'm not upset about it. I am upset about it. But they have the right. You know, it's their lives. And that's fine. But,
yeah, it is what it is.
Yeah, so I do know. I still do know quite a few people there, but my life took a much different turn, and I'm just kind of things were kind of coming back in a circle. I originally paid for this certification program back in 2015 when I was getting divorced. So, but it's one of those ones where you have a lifetime to finish it. So I got started in it back then, and then didn't do it for quite a while. I had surgeries and I had so much selling my house and, and so I'm coming back to it now. I'm like, oh, you know, the pandemic's over and this is, and I felt a calling. Things happened. And now here we are. So,
yeah.
So and now you're now, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So, well, you asked earlier, like, well, sometimes people like to talk about what they're doing and like what they're plugging kind of thing. And what I'm plugging is just anyone who has interest in talking to me about basically what I'm going to be doing and if they have any useful information for me for what I'm going to be doing.
Say more.
It's a doula, like before birth, like getting ready for it during birth and then after, so postpartum, but also childbirth educator and then help with lactation or breastfeeding, and then also death doula. So it kind of goes all along the lines of one of those times when people are closest to the spiritual world and how these processes have patterns, they have a way of working out. And if I can ease that for people and help them process it in a way that helps them grow instead of being traumatized because they just don't know what's going on, that's what I want. I'm here for. And yeah, even if people want to talk about it. Because at this point I'm, you know, still finishing my certification, but I'm at the point where I've got to do like practicum. So I've actually got to help people and then have feedback from it so that I can reflect and grow and get to the point where I want to hang my shingle, you know?
Yeah,
absolutely.
Right. Right. That's so cool. Would you be doing like online services?
I could. I plan to do in-person stuff, but you know, I don't know what it could develop into. I'm used to being online nowadays with the pandemic. I was able to be productive and reach my goals still when real life stuff was a roadblock. So that may develop that way. I'm willing to let it come about and the best way that's a fit. So,
well, I've heard
talking to people online. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I've heard North Dakota is like the state in the United States that's least likely to experience disasters as a result of climate change. So it's like, not a place there's tornadoes or hurricanes or.
We have blizzards, like, very, very bad blizzards though.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah. It's cold here. Like Grand Forks, depending on what information you're looking at, but like NWS information, we are sometimes the coldest place in the lower 48 when you average out temperature for the whole year. And then it's kind of, we have weather that really goes back and forth. Today in February, when it's usually like 20 something and gets in the negatives at night, and we have feet of snow sometimes, 10 feet of snow built up by now. There is no snow on the ground. It has been 50 today, but we are expecting 2 to 4 inches of snow tonight. And temperatures in the negatives. So, yeah, this place, I've seen it go 90 degree difference in 1 week.
Oh, wow.
It's really weird. However, yeah, we don't have the water. We don't have lake effect. We don't have volcanoes or seismic stuff. We don't. Yeah, I mean, it's pretty flat out here. It's just blizzard. Yeah. The blizzards are bad.
Yeah. Well, maybe that'll come down as the planet warms or something. I don't know. I don't know what people are.
I really don't know. I don't know. I had a dream. I had this prophetic dream about the weather. So I'm staying here for a while. That sounds weird. I know, but whatever.
I can dig it.
There are certain dreams that I can't shake. And I just know better to I've had too many come true to know, to ignore them completely. Especially when it's not something, when it's something I could, there's other reasons to stay here too, you know?
Yeah.
Combination.
Yeah. But it's a good place to, I think, sort of be more off the grid and kind of self-sufficient. That's what I've heard.
Yeah. It's hard to be off the grid here because of the cold, if you don't live in town, you have to have someone who can plow you out. You have a harder time with electricity and getting food and all of that. No, it's in North Dakota, the towns, like when I came from Illinois, you would drive through the country and there'd be a little town here, a little town there. People spread out everywhere. Here, people are centered in the cities. And then there's the people who, everyone else who lives outside of town is like a homesteader almost to them. They have really nice farms. They have money. I know. But there's the little communities are just like hardcore. It's hard to live out there.
Yeah. Well, I guess what I'm trying to connect is homeschool community that I don't know if something like that exists where I am. Everybody seems to be so.
I have noticed there's a lot of community out here where there might not be in the states that I've visited, like traveling around. Like I went back to Illinois where I was from and I was surprised at how I looked at their Facebook and I was looking to meet up with certain groups or do certain things, activities, right? I'm like, wow, they just don't have that much community going on compared to us. I do believe there is people band together here because at least winters are cold and long and you really got to huddle up, man. You got to get your friends and huddle up. I think it made COVID a little easier. There's a joke here that when we were told to stay 6 feet away from people, we were like, that's too close. No. I hope that's not, I don't think it's an isolation thing though. It's more you have your tribes and
I have a friend who grew up in the middle of nowhere, Illinois, and he was telling me that when you pass in his hometown, when you pass another car on the dirt roads around there, if you're going in opposite directions, it's considered almost mandatory to stop for a second and chat for 20, 30 minutes because it's so rare that you see another human being that it's exciting to
In Illinois?
Yeah, somewhere in Illinois.
He must live farther out in the boonies than I do.
Yeah.
But yeah. I spent plenty of time just driving around in the nowhere. We used to do Zen driving, which is where you leave town and then you find someone who looks like they know where they're going and you follow them.
Oh, yeah.
You stop and find another person until you're like, this is good enough. And then you try to find your way home without a map.
Oh, I like that.
You end
that.
Up just driving around in the country and seeing all kinds of stuff. And you just, it's adventure. Yeah. You never know what's going to happen. All kinds of cool stuff. It's been very fun.
Yeah, that's almost
sure. I like to do something new. It's I've got to do that in order to keep myself from seeking intense things that may be more harmful for me. Like, I have to let it out by being like, novelty, that's okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's a healthy form of novelty, right? That, like, kind of liminal state that you get into when you're on a long car drive.
Yeah,
it's like
and
your body's just enough occupied by the driving of the car, and your mind is quieted a little bit by the moving scenery, and you can kind of get into
it. It's the flow thing. And not only that, but I've always been of the mind that if I do a lot of novel things, my life will feel long and full to me, because I'm not going to remember washing the dishes 10,000 times.
Yeah.
I'm going to remember, I probably will way more easily remember 10,000 novel things that I did.
Right. Yeah.
So I'm chock full of stories.
That's what we're here for, right? We're right. Building memories. I think it takes that kind of like novelty seeking attitude to be someone who's like brave enough to set up a panel of birth experts, you know? Like that's a
yeah.
Those I feel like those personality traits correlate.
I guess so. I don't know. It was an interesting thing too, like trying to find different people and calling around to see who I could find. It's something I'm going to have to do again soon, actually, as I, and before I actually, again, like hang my shingle, just so that I have as the business aspect. So I have more of my contacts built up as I go back into the field. Yeah. So
yeah.
I've lost contact with everybody, but, and I also, some people I don't necessarily talk to, but a lot of them are on Facebook around here, like the biggest people in the like home birth community. So
yeah. Can we talk about home birth?
Yeah. Like,
you used a word that I've heard used a couple times, which is portal.
Yeah.
And I'm very curious to know more about that.
Okay.
I don't know.
What's I think I said right the word portal specifically, but something I said made you have that word. It was something close to it, right? The pillars.
Yeah,
maybe. Talking about the pillars of life and death. If you like,
maybe yeah.
If you look into the occult or you look into like the cards, the pillars are on a couple of the tarot cards too. But it has a lot to do with those pillars of life and death when you're closest. As again, disclaimers. I'm just saying some things. So the pillars of life and death closest to the spiritual world or closest to source or what the unknown people just might call it, some sort of veil. And as far as coming into like human coming into the world for a mom and that whole process that happens, I was talking about it being empowering. It's a whole strange process. And in the material world, if we're talking material things, you know, the mother's brain is going through a lot of hormonal changes and they are literally going into like the lizard brain is the one taking over. So your prefrontal cortex slowly gets shut off and you become very vulnerable and you are in that like liminal in between state. You are in your subconscious. You are in your lizard brain and your primal's taken over. It is a very life-changing thing. You have to give in to this process in order for it to work properly, which is I can soapbox on it, but it's part of why hospital and medicalized birth can be so injurious on a spiritual level, because you have to give into that whole process and you have to conquer this thing that can't be turned around. Like, it has to happen. You're pregnant now, and unless you die this is happening. And there's the conquering of it, but also it's a journey. It's a very trippy place to be.
You are
very vulnerable and to suggestion. You are mentally in a hypnotic state almost.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm picturing the in the Rider-Waite-Smith deck, the moon card, of course. I wonder why I'm thinking of the moon, but it's got the two pillars sort of in the background and the winding path between them. And it's like a card that represents like subconscious, and it's got the lobster jumping out of the water.
Yeah.
And
The scorpion.
Yeah, the lobster. I feel like you've just unlocked something for me where it's like, also the pillars on the high priestess, it's the B and the J pillars. And then there's the like veil.
Those pillars are the ones I'm talking about.
So okay.
The letters on them having to do with begin back to the occult and Latin. So those would be the pillars. Those are the, our life is in between those.
Yeah.
It's the metaphor. Yeah.
And there's like a passage through them.
Yeah.
That connects you to something ephemeral.
So it's the melding of that subconscious with your conscious, which is a big theme in like high magic. You're basically trying to, like I was talking about earlier, use symbols to be able to speak to your subconscious. So here's the thing, when I'm doing a conversation with someone, when you come up, oh, the card, I had all these correspondences pop up like a cloud above my head. And so it's like, oh my gosh, which one do I talk about? It's like, oh, okay, so we're talking about, oh, intuition. Oh, we're talking about the moon. So we're talking about like, yeah, being able to take that walk towards source, like coming in and that melding within yourself. So going so deep within that you and your subconscious become one. And so that's kind of like when people talk about like the Holy Guardian Angel.
And yeah.
That they're kind of talking about a similar thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and there's also just that flow, that intuition flow, like being able to talk to it all the time, keeping a dream journal so that it can start talking to you, meditating so you can hear the voice. It's all the same sort of thing, which is being able to not intellectualize everything that's coming through, but letting it bubble up and go into action without like having to intellectualize it anymore. But just being like, I feel like this is what to do. I feel like this is what to do. And really being able, And when you're in that flow, it's weird how the universe is like, okay, I'm just going to like let this happen and this happen and this happen. And you get in that flow state where things are happening like that. And it's like, wow.
That's right there. So I'm interested to hear more about this term, Holy Guardian Angel, because what it's reminding me of is like the concept of yoga, the union or samadhi with, between Atman and Brahman, where you're kind of like, you're so absorbed. Samadhi is like a state of meditative absorption that you're so present that your actions are identical with the decisions that God would have through you.
Right. Yes. It's a very similar thing. It's like, finding that spot, what do they call it? The true will. People think that has to do with what they want to do, but the true will, I believe, has to do with tapping into like what the universe is meaning for you to do, and like following that, and like being in that flow. Exactly, like having that divine voice coming down, and I've experienced that in a lot of different ways, and it's weird. I've come to high magic actually after, like I said, having COVID. And before that, I would just get into that flow a lot. My life just amazes me sometimes, and the coincidences and the flows I've been. There's been days where like I never even had to try to call a cab or a ride or something. Like just bling, someone needs something, or I'm like, hey, I need to go this place, and then like someone there really needed me and I had that particular skill for that emergency, or just like I've had so many weird things happen through my life, and and I was just trying to get back to that. I felt like I'd had COVID had like disconnected me or something. It was weird. It was like having water poured on that flame. It was worse. I say was, but like it's something I'm still like processing and dealing with, and you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Does it feel like, so sometimes the metaphor that I like to use is that you've got like kind of the karmic obscurations between your antenna and this like connection to the source energy that wants to act through you.
Right. Does it feel like- I feel like before I was just already like listening, you know, and suddenly they just decided to leave because I can't hear it. Right. It's weird. And that seems it's an impression I get, and I don't have it all the time. Sometimes I feel nowadays there's been more coming on, and the more I talk about it, and the more I'm trying, and through I've been doing ritual, and a whole lot going on, and it's interesting coming to this point. But when I heard about the Holy and Guardian Angel and all that, and I was like, okay, and these ideas, I was like, okay, this is interesting, yeah. And there was things that was pointing me that direction. Weird coincidences. Like walking along thinking about it and finding this picture behind me in my in somebody's trash or sitting in the alley by the trash. I don't know. It's kind of dark in here. You see that, Angel?
Oh, yeah. Look at that.
Yeah. And so I had that sitting. I had been thinking about those sorts of things, and I found that, and I had hung it up, and it had been watching over us and stuff, and I was just like, that's cool. That's an angel. This was before I heard about the Holy Guardian Angel specifically. This was another time when I had just been thinking about, like, my connection with Source and creativity, and after I got divorced when things kind of seemed, again, distant, right?
Yeah.
So, after I get COVID, I find this thing when I'm starting to clear out the mess of my room after I'd been sick for, like, a month, and hadn't been able to focus. I'm like, I'm going to put this up here. I need this to watch over me. And this is cool. And I start reading about the Holy Guardian Angel. Well, I decided to take, I decided to do this retreat with Damien Eccles, who is a known magician. Yeah. Like astrotheurgist is what I would call him. I think that's what he would call himself.
Oh, I like that term. That's like star energy.
Among other things. But yeah, as far as the magic goes, astrotheurgy. Is what he has described his particular field as. And so I went to his Holy Guardian. It was about the Holy Guardian Angel and like connecting with the Holy Guardian Angel. And it was a it was like a couple day retreat in which there were various presenters and topics. It was fascinating. And I had a couple weird coincidences. But one of them was I was like, someone had noticed that I'd been talking about on the video that was in the class, had noticed my angel back there. And I was like, yeah, I had found that angel. The coolest thing. I said, I'm not sure what it's from. I'm like, is it from a movie? Or I said, it's probably just some weird shit from the 80s. And, you know, like figurine.
Yeah.
And I look it up. It's a German painting, or a painting by a German painter. And it's entitled The Holy Guardian Angel.
No.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so fun.
Yeah. Yeah, I was like, oh, okay. And it wasn't just like Guardian Angel or Holy Angel, or it was the Holy Guardian Angel. And I was what?
And that's a term from, presumably it has a meaning in like...
Or something?
What was that?
I think it's from the 40s or something. I don't know. I Google lensed it. That's what I did. And I figured it out. Yeah. That it was that painting. I love Google.
Yeah. Yeah.
But what were you saying? Well, I interrupted, but you didn't have that full thought out, or at least I didn't understand it.
No worries. So like presumably Holy Guardian Angel is like a term in mainstream Christianity, but I'm wondering more.
I was talking about the Holy Guardian Angel and Crowley. When it comes to like Golden Dawn and Thelema, it's the marriage of the Holy Guardian Angel. So in the Golden Dawn, which is like the high magic, the astrotheurgy, it's a whole bunch of things, but it's a term from there. And it's one of the first things that like, when you're working with that magical system that you're trying to attain, you're working your way up the Sephiroth of the Tree of Life until you get to the Tifereth. Well, Tifereth is like the holy guardian angel. It's like the Christ consciousness sort of thing. And you're basically, reaching out for the wisdom of the divine for what's called the knowledge and conversation with your holy guardian angel, the KNC of the HDA. So that's something that since then I've been like including in my ritual, that mine has been the things that I've kind of aiming towards and are focusing on are health, wealth, and divine wisdom or knowledge and conversation with the Holy Guardian Angel. Which is also another coincidence, because I found out that's three of like the four tenets of crap. Okay. It was in my occult research. Anyway.
Hang on one second. I'll be right back.
It's in my
book. I'll be right back.
But yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. Do the thing.
Sorry for the delay there. We were talking about the Holy Guardian Angel, and I guess is it like I've heard it described as like your future self, or maybe your true self, like the self that you're being pulled or attracted toward becoming.
Yeah. Through. So I'm gonna say right now, for anyone who like wants to hit me up and be like, that's not what that means. I think it's one of those things that everyone has like their own interpretation of specifically what it means. And I'm not trying to say, hey, this is definitely the answer. But to me, I definitely do feel like it is a connection to like I don't know necessarily a higher voice, but like a voice that gives really good advice. Sometimes I feel like it's almost like my subconscious will go around picking up all this information that I'm not necessarily noticing straight in my inner attention. Like when you're paying attention, there's a lot going on around you that you're still picking up, but you don't realize you're picking it up. And it gets processed in there and it spits it out. And like it's that voice that's like not kidding myself.
Mm, I like the way you said that.
Yeah, like it's just not kidding. I know. And the other voice, my one that's just going on monkey brain, is the rationalizing voice, you know.
Yeah.
It just wants to make up stories and like twist everything, whereas the other one's just like, this is facts that have been noticed and patterns.
Yeah. It's the voice that your tarot deck wants you to like listen to when you've asked it the same question many times.
Seeing these patterns, and like these patterns are, it's when it starts to get weird, you know. It's like, again, in the material world, if you decide to believe in the Big Bang, in the material world, like we were all connected at one point, and then all that energy exploded out from one point. There was stardust and it became us. I'm not going to explain all the stuff in between. That's like K through 12 stuff. So, you know, like, but like our brains are like have these patterns in them. They literally have patterns in them, twists and turns and whatnot. And like our DNA and up through time. And yeah, I feel like it's like, that's a playground. That's part of our consciousness is in there. We have this awake looking at this out and like at what appears to be my physical hands and like this view screen. There's just the view and the quiet voice and the nothingness. There's that. And then you have like your voice that's the rationalizing, and you have your one that's giving the like, just like, I noticed all these patterns. This is real. Like this has existed through millions of years. This is because like we survived through all that time and that was all passed to us. It's like Jung, like he explained that he went to all different parts of the world and looked at different cultures and they had similar symbolism. And how did that happen? You know, how we've talked to our brain for a long time. And so that's what I feel is, that's that voice. I think that's what we're partially what we're listening to with the HGA. Because if I don't, there's a lot of I told you so.
Yeah.
It gets hijacked a lot. Our attention gets hijacked by other stuff, and it's good to go back and listen to that voice for sure. That's what I think it is. Does it exist outside or inside? I mean, even Crowley himself was like, I don't know. This is just what it appears to be. I outside myself in reality. Like, okay, I don't know. That's a weird thing to say. But what I mean is it all seems like everything's pretty subjective to the self in everything I've experienced so far. So, like, I'm in it, you know?
Yeah.
Even if you think like you're outside, how can you really know you're outside? You're still in it then. It's that whole dualism thing, like being everything and nothing. Yeah.
Yeah. There's no escaping it. So we've been going for about an hour. I want to return to that Five of Swords.
Okay.
For closing thoughts. I think we may have taken a bit of a detour from.
Yeah, because we kind of went on to like birth stuff and. And the Five of Swords, there's so many ways to look at it. It depends whether you're looking at this occult way or the Thelema way, or if you just like look at the little book that I have with it, which is very simple. It just gives a few words. The Five of Swords, it has a lot to do with looking at the challenges you having going on square in the eye and then persisting in the ways that seem uncomfortable, even though you know it's the right way, literally listening to that HGA.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Actually with that framing, the conversation that we had where we talked about like the demanding trial of home birth. And we talked about, how that those like pillars of life and death can become a portal to your like higher self or your HGA. Like with that framing, we kind of did capture the Five of Swords. That's really fun. And I will say, like, even though we may have taken a detour from the jaw punch that you expected from the tarot, everything that we talked about was like super meaningful and synchronistic and just like aligned with everything that I'm obsessed with. So this was really, really fun.
Yeah, absolutely. And it was helpful to me because it seems like, again, like I said before, when I start to despair, I'll have a day where I really spiral and then suddenly like I'll start to get the signs. So in this case, it was literal signs. Like, I had, a year ago or so, saw something where someone was like, you know, you can just ask the universe to show you a sign. And I was like, all right, then. I don't usually ever ask for anything. I've always thought I was a person who, like, went with the flow and I would divine things or go with things, but I would never try to force anything or impress my will on things except in the most subtle ways that just like went with, you know, like, well, I'm gonna need a ride, and then it happens sort of thing. It wasn't like, damn it, give me a ride, you know. I never so anyway, it was weird to do that, and I got the sign that same day, and I said it in a way it was like, and also I can't see it on social media or from any algorithm or anything like that, you know? And it was, came in a completely unexpected way. I was like, okay, all right. Well, I had that twice yesterday, that same sign. And I was like, oh, and I made sure it was something like I wouldn't just see everywhere too. So that was weird. And then, and it basically just said like, not even anything specific more about it. It's like, no more information, just persist.
Just persist.
You are saying the thing, you know, you believe it. I get scared to believe the things because I'm scared of being shamed and having something bad happen to me. Like, have you seen that? The videos with the metaphysical store where the woman was being harassed for having it in her town. It's very conservative here. So, like, I worry. Yeah. And I worry just about,
Yeah, it can be scary. I mean, but persist.
The current of fear kind of came down on me with the COVID. That was something I really noticed. And it was, I'm not used to having to push through, like, I guess that's anxiety. So people will throw that word around, but it's like, I'm just straight up feeling fear about a lot of things like that. And that's anxiety. Yeah. That's what that is. Oh, I used to be so ballsy. I'm just doing it.
That's, yeah, that does feel like the global initiation that we went through. It, like, everyone experienced just a huge brain dump of fear. Just,
yeah, right? Just okay. Pumped it feels into good us. To hear someone say that. It's not just me. I feel like I'm like flailing at times. And I talk to myself and it's like, what are you even scared of doing that thing? Just do that thing. And I'm like, try to be nice to myself too.
Be nice. But it's a constant.
I am having to do that a lot. Like, it's something I'm encountering still quite a bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
Yeah. Feel the fear. It's okay. Like, I'm feeling it too.
Before, I would just do the thing. I would do like all sorts. It was like, it's so weird being in this spot because I have so much to give and so much to do. Like, you can't pour you can't pour water on the fire. That's me, because like, that's how I do all the things for people. I'm working on it. Part of it was also falling into groups of people that were trying to suppress my me being me.
Yeah.
And that's something I'm extricating myself from too. So like, there's also things like that, but yeah, this is awesome. This feels very validating. Thank you.
Wonderful.
I needed that.
Yeah. I'm glad. Hopefully I can act as a part of the signs, you know? Like, this was a delight to talk to you. You're so much energy and life. It is really fun.
I know. This is that part. And I was feeling it. I've just been like feeling it at times leading up to this, which is odd. It's I sometimes, if you ever heard the expression guardian at the threshold?
Oh, it's,
that's another one of those words, another one of those phrases, like holy guardian angel, where it's like there is
dweller at the threshold.
Yeah. And I feel like for me, when it comes to changing and leaving behind old patterns or like pushing out energies that like are not serving me anymore, but is comfortable. The guardian, the threshold, is that part of me that despairs and tries to give up at the last minute before I make the change and like go all in, right?
Yeah.
And it's like, do you really want to? Do you really? And it's like a pressure and things get really intense. And then all of a sudden it's like a pop. And this is like the pop. It is so that's what I was feeling earlier when I was like, I'm marinating in this energy. Like it was like, something's happening. Yes. It's we're going past the guardian. He's letting us through.
Thanks, guardian. All right. I've got a sign off there. That's the perfect spot, I think. This was a real joy, though, and I hope we continue talking. Absolutely. Of course,
I'm in the Discord. I'll still keep participating in different ways.
Yeah.
I really enjoy the community. Thanks for having it.
Yeah. And thanks for being a part of it. You really add something wonderful.
Absolutely. Yay.
Yeah.
This is wonderful.
Yay.
Have a wonderful evening.
You too. Bye-bye.